97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC's School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, what's called the adjusted graduation gap for college athletes. Our guest, Richard Southall, director of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina. Richard, this topic has the potential of becoming very murky very quickly because of how many numbers we're dealing with, how many acronyms we're dealing with. But before we get to the adjusted graduation gap, I do want to talk about APR. UNC just is touting its new high in the APR score, 987 out of 1,000. 18 individual sports scored a perfect 1,000 in the APR. You can explain to our listeners what that is. But my basic understanding of it is it's a measure of two things. As an athlete, are you still in school? Are you still enrolled at that institution? And number two, do you have a 2.0 GPA? Is that oversimplifying it, or is that in essence the APR?
Well, it is. You're right to an extent, and that's a good cliff note type understanding of the APR or the academic progress rate. What it really looks at is, are you making progress towards a degree, and are you eligible to compete? So you're exactly right when you were talking about that 2.0 or whatever the grade point average is that is required for eligibility. And it's interesting because the APR is touted as a real-time measure of athletes' progress towards their degree. So really it's a metric that deals with keeping, or are you keeping your athletes eligible? Which, again, there's some indication that the APR may actually exacerbate things like academic clustering. It may cause some issues with academic, quote-unquote, scandals, those things. So, again, the APR is not a good nor a bad metric. It simply measures athletes' progress towards degree primarily and their eligibility.
So, to me, it seems very unsophisticated. And number two, it seems like not a really good measure. So what it brings to mind is my saying, I'm on the basketball court and I hit 100 shots in a row, but I happen to be standing 6 inches away from the goal. So, you know, 2.0, not a very high bar, still in school. I mean, you know, you either are or you're not. So why does the NC2A seem to put so much emphasis on that particular measure?
Well, it's an interesting phenomenon about how it was developed and when it was developed. As far back as the mid to late 1980s, the NCAA began doing research on academic issues and graduation rates, specifically, very famously, Dexter Manley, who graduated from Oklahoma State University, was functionally illiterate, and he testified before Congress to that effect. So when you said a little earlier in your question or your comment that it was didn't particularly seem to be a quote-unquote good metric, the APR is, in fact, a very effective metric for what it, in my opinion, is actually designed for. It's designed to counteract the argument that college athletes aren't receiving an education, and this is not about education. So in response to abysmally low federal graduation rates, the APR and the graduation success rate were developed in what I characterize it as rebranding academic success. And so the APR and the GSR are actually very good metrics in that they serve the purpose that they are designed, which is primarily public relations, because the issue is, if you look back, well, let me kind of take a step back. If you look at how the APR is calculated, one of the outcomes is that Everything is turned into a what looks to be a percentage type score, but it's a score out of 1,000, which it that you know the 930, 935 scores that are always talked about that equate to a 50% graduation rate. 50% doesn't sound nearly as good as a 935 or a 987, because a 987, you think of an A. You convert that score into a percentage mentally, because I continually ask people, what does that 987 mean? And quite frankly, most people, when they talk about it, talk about that it is an outstanding score. And so the APR and the GSR are very effective tools to take the focus off of the quality of the education and to deal with educational analysis or analysis of the education being afforded athletes into a quantitative and very aseptic type of a report. So that's really what the primary function of this is you have a reputational crisis, which is athletes not getting an education and not graduating at high rates according to the federal graduation rate. So you develop your own metrics. And, of course, if you're involved in public relations, you're going to develop a metric that is going to paint your organization in a much more positive light. So that's Public Relations 101.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Richard Southall of the College Sport Research Institute about what he is calling the adjusted graduation gap. Actually, we haven't talked about the AGG at all yet. We've been talking about the APR. And one more quick question about that academic progress report. You're correct to say that any measure is only as good as what it's intended to measure and what you want to see from it. You know, you have lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? You can make statistics say whatever you want to say. But right. the 2.0, there's nothing that I can see in the APR that says, how did you get to that 2.0? What sort of classes were you taking? What's the rigor of those classes?
Well, and that's the real issue is educational quality is not the same as simply progress towards a degree, grade point average, or diploma. And so, determining what sort of an education an athlete or any other student is being afforded is by its very nature a qualitative exercise. But the APR and the GSR and the FGR and the AGG and all of the things that we would do in our statistical analysis are offering a quantitative measure to put into context a discussion about the quality of an education. As I tell students that might take a class with me, a C is not an F. And a C actually means that you met all the qualifications, you did all the work necessary, and is a normal or a good score.
Our students don't see it that way.
Of course they don't. Of course they don't. And that's yeah. As I tell students, I said, I'm more interested that you have obtained an education and that you're a critical thinker. I really don't care what your GPA is. But that's a very difficult thing. So the APR and the GSR and all of these metrics are really designed to try to offer a quantitative snapshot to then let's have a discussion about the quality of the education.
Enough with the alphabet soup of APR, FGR, GSR, NCAA, and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk about adjusted graduation gap. This is your measure that you've developed along with other researchers to address what you see as flaws, if you will, in the other measures. If the other measures are perfect, why mess with them? Why not just accept them? So one of the highlights from your report about the adjusted graduation gap is that your results, we'll get to the actual numbers in a second, but your results contrast sharply with the impressions of improving athlete graduation rate trends created by various NC2A reports. So explain that for us.
Well, the initial premise of the work that Dr. Eckerd, who's at University of Colorado Denver, initially did was to look at the gap in graduation rates between full-time students and full-time athletes. All college athletes their graduation rates are reported in the NCAA data, whether it's on the GSR, which cannot be compared to the general student population. That's the primary limitation of the graduation success rate, in addition to the graduation success rate removing athletes who leave in good academic standing from the cohort. So what we try
so
to
they,
do is
they
to
quit
not,
count they quit counting those. Once they
right.
leave, they quit counting.
They're removed from the sample.
Okay.
Which reduces your sample size and actually increases the graduation rate reported by somewhere between 15% and 25%. So what we're trying to offer is an additional way of looking at the data. We are not trying to replace the federal graduation rate or the graduation success rate, but to try to provide what many people in organizational theory or whatnot would talk about as a more of a 360-degree view of the situation. And so what we're doing is comparing the graduation rates, the federal graduation rates of the full-time population at a university with the graduation rates of athletes in football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, and softball. And we're going to do this next year. We're going to start expanding that out to Olympic sports. So what we're trying to give a snapshot of is, okay, what is the graduation rate of those students who are full-time students?
Okay.
Because many colleges and universities have a high number of part-time students who are working. Some of them might be working full-time and going to school part-time. And those students are going to consequently drag down the federal graduation rate for that college or university. So what we're trying to do is to say, okay, college athletes must be going to school full-time. Let's compare them to a sample of full-time students at that same university. And what one of the thoughts behind the AGG is that most full-time students do not work a full-time job as well.
Although it could be argued that athletes are working a full-time job.
That is exactly right. That's our premise in saying, because I'm of the contention that college athletes should not be required to go to school full-time, that they should be allowed an opportunity to go to school and take advantage of the educational benefit, but they should not be required to go to school full-time. Because going to school full-time and trying to compete in athletics, we know disproportionately leads college athletes in individual and certain sports to cluster in certain majors. So, you know, famously, Kane Coulter, who was former quarterback at Northwestern, wanted to go and do a pre-med program, but he couldn't because it conflicted too much with his football obligations. So basically his job precluded him from getting access to an educational opportunity that he would have liked to have taken. So what we're trying to point out is that, in fact, not all college athletes are the same. The requirements of time demands are not all the same for all the sports. And so what we're trying to offer is another picture to say, you know what, maybe your collegiate model of athletic is not the best model. Maybe we should have other alternative ways of looking at the situation, because clearly college athletes in football, men's basketball, and baseball are not graduating at the same rate as other full-time students. The data is clear on that.
And Sports Focus, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Richard Southall of the College Sport Research Institute of the Adjusted Graduation Gap. And Richard, here we are in our third block, and we're finally getting to the numbers. You know, we talked about a 987 and how good that looks on a scale of 1,000. Your numbers don't look nearly that good. Your adjusted graduation gap for overall men's sports is a negative 23 compared to what?
compared to the full-time male population in the conferences, in the Big Five, and then the other five. That's what that gap means. So that what that's telling you is that, for example, for football, men's and women's basketball, we do analyses, and then we do for baseball. So what that shows is that the athletes are not graduating at the same rate.
Well, for those three sports, right? Let me make sure we're clear about this. Football, basketball, and baseball are the three that we're looking at for men.
Yes, those are the three sports for men. And so each we look at them individually. So the number that you're pointing out, I don't have the data right in front of me, but it could be that if it's from the last report, that would have been from basketball. And so the other thing that we do is break out the gap by ethnicity. So we're looking at white players versus black players. And you'll notice that in the reports, we delineate quite clearly that this is really a disparity in graduation rates of African-American male athletes, you know, in those sports. And so what's driving this gap? One of the first things that is driving the gap in football and men's basketball specifically are transfers. In men's basketball, for example, there's some indication that upwards of about 40% of all basketball players in the Division I ranks is going to transfer. Well, we know that transfers don't graduate at the same rate as students that go straight through. So that's not necessarily a bad thing because college students in general transfer quite frequently, but the motivations for transferring are oftentimes much different for basketball players than they are for the general student population.
More playing time, for example.
That's right. That's right. And so you have those issues there. And then the other issue is that the AGG speaks to is we need to have a frank and open conversation about admissions. You know, the special admissions process and all of those things, when you are admitting athletes who are underprepared because they come from failed educational system in the United States, and then you are asking those same athletes to work a full-time job, and you're possibly putting them into majors that they're not motivated to study or they're not interested in studying, it is a recipe for recipe for disaster. You're not giving those athletes an equal access to an education, which some people have characterized this as a civil rights issue. And so, you know, this is a very complex situation in which we need to, as a country and as a society and as university administrators, faculty, fans, we need to take an open and honest, frank look at big-time college sport, and really, if we are okay with all of the failings, and we're not providing a legitimate education to numerous people, we need to think about that. You know, because this is not a criticism of coaches, not a criticism of fans having loyalty to their university and so on. This is fundamentally a question that we need to deal with is this big time sports industry? Is it education? And so our data clearly calls that into question. And the statistics, we've been running them now for 6 years. The trend line is clear. There is no decrease in this gap. It's just not taking place.
The methodology
has been examined by the NCAA. They have never once come out and said that our methodology is flawed or that our sampling or our statistical analysis is illegitimate.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Richard Southall. Thanks also to engineer Dylan Field, and thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.